Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I am big time excited. I am speaking with coach and speaker Joe Calloway. Joe Calloway has written some wonderful books, and we're going to talk about at least one of them today. But Joe helps great companies get even better. He helps organizations and top-performing individuals focus on what is truly important. He inspires constant improvement and motivates people to immediate action. And I think we're going to talk about that, too, because that phrase, immediate action, I think is pretty important, particularly these days. He is a business author, an advisor, and a speaker, and Joe's corporate client list reads like a who's who in business, ranging from companies like Coca-Cola and IBM to Cadillac and American Express. Joe is the author of 5 groundbreaking business books, including Becoming a Category of One, which received rave reviews from the New York Times, Publishers Weekly, Retailing Today, and many others. His newest book is Be the Best at What Matters Most, and we're going to be talking about that book a lot lately, largely because I've read it, and it's great. It's a very, very good book. So Joe is also a popular speaker for business meetings and events, and he also works with clients to help them achieve specific results and improvements in his exclusive 90-day advisory programs. Although he has been inducted into the Speakers Hall of Fame, he doesn't do traditional speeches. Instead, he actively engages people in highly interactive keynote presentations and workshops that challenge assumptions and create new ways of thinking. You can find his books on his website, joecalloway.com, and, of course, in bookstores everywhere. Joe, I am so glad you're here today.
I wouldn't be anywhere else. This is the place to be.
Thank you. You know, it's so funny. I had to do a makeup interview with Meredith Elliott Powell yesterday. We had a lot of trouble with her interview last week. And we were talking. It's funny how things just kind of show up at the same time. But we were talking yesterday about top-performing individuals. It's just odd. You know, you keep hearing the same things over and over again. Might be time to pay attention.
Yeah, it might be. And, you know, I think you really touch on something significant when you say keep hearing the same things over and over again,
mm-hmm.
because I had somebody come up to me before a speech not too long ago, and he said, boy, I hope you've got some silver bullets for us because I need something new. And I said, well, I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I haven't seen a silver bullet. I said, there's what works, and it's pretty well been proven. And everybody pretty much knows what it is. So I think it's not a matter of we don't know what to do, although sometimes that's the case. But I do think that more often it's the case of we know what to do and we're just not doing it.
Right. And I think people get paralyzed, Joe. They think, okay, there's so many steps. I don't know the exact steps to take, so I'm just going to stand here and moan for a while.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite metaphors I ever heard, and it kind of gets to that idea of overwhelm, and I don't know how to do all of it, so I'm going to wait until I do before I do any of it. And the metaphor is that you can drive from New York to Los Angeles all at night, driving only at night in pitch black darkness, and you only need to see 200 feet in front of you at a time, which is as far as your headlights go. And, you know, that idea has been helpful to me because I'm one of those people. And I tell you, I wonder how many opportunities I've missed, Denise, because I didn't want to do it until I knew it was going to be perfect. And so I ended up not doing it at all. And so there you've got an opportunity lost.
Yeah, exactly. I keep a journal, and the reason I keep a journal, and it's I'm a nerd, so it's an electronic journal. It's on my computer. Yeah, I'm able to type quickly. I can I can type about as almost as fast as I can think, which you can't do if you're writing longhand. I can dump pictures in there.
I don't write.
I don't write.
I have to type. It's just the
way
I process. Yeah, I have to type it.
Yeah, me too. Now, I do have notebooks and I'll jot down ideas, but they always go into a document or my journal. But when you talk about missed opportunities, my journal holds me up to the fire, let me tell you, because I can go back in there and type in a keyword or, you know, look for something that I was thinking a few years ago. Or, this is even worse. I'll think, okay, I think I had this great idea. I need to go act on it. And I think I had this thought about 3 months ago. And I go look in my journal and hang my head in shame because it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I know.
So you're right. If you don't take action right away, something's, I don't, maybe you can circle back around to it, maybe not.
Well, you know, and I do a lot of speaking engagements, and most of the time, 90% of the time, I always end by talking about action. And if it's, for example, if I'm the closing speaker at the end of a 3-day convention or corporate event, I close by saying, all right, let me tell you something. I said, let's just put this on the table. Every idea you've heard in the last 3 days is absolutely worthless. And I just stop right there for a second. I know, and everybody goes, whoa. and then I say, unless the ideas are worthless, unless you do what? And a number of them will always say, unless we take action. And
right.
I say, it's true, but the only thing that really gives an idea value is to take action, because otherwise it's just that. It's just an idea and it never becomes reality.
Right. And we're all guilty of it. I know I am.
Oh, I am,
Yeah, sometimes I look back and go, really, Denise, really? And other times I'm like, whew, God, I didn't do that one. So, but I think the ability to go back and look at them is helpful because, it allows me to move forward. It's like, that was a great idea. It's still valid. It's still relevant.
Yeah.
Now I can take action. Or that other one, what the heck were you thinking, girl?
What was that all about?
Yeah, like the big hair, the shoulder pads. Oh, my God.
Well, yeah, but everybody was, so,
I know. So tell me, before, I've got a ton of questions for you, so before I just kind of pepper you or salt you with these questions,
okay.
why don't you tell our audience a little bit more about yourself and where they can find you on the Internet?
Well, they can find me on the Internet just at my website, which is just my name, joecalloway.com, and Calloway is spelled Calloway. And what I do is actually most of my work is to look at the marketplace and look at companies that are able to sustain success and the people within those companies, also individuals that are top performers, and say my approach has been kind of a benchmark approach, meaning that I say, what did they all have in common? I'm talking about from a mom-and-pop pizza joint that does just extraordinarily well, and people line up to get in, and they're having fun, and it's a successful business. What does that little business have in common with Apple or Google or Ford? And interestingly enough, there are a handful of things that all top-performing companies, businesses, and people, you can transfer all this to your personal life too, that they all tend to have in common. And so that's what most all of my books have been about. That's what my speaking is about, the videos that I've made. Oh, before I forget, this is a cool deal. This is one of the coolest things we ever did. If you go to my website, people can go to the videos page and scroll down and they can download utterly, totally for free, download the link to 21 very short, like 2 minutes each, videos that I did. And each video is on a different topic. One of them is about taking action. The way people get a lot of use out of them is not only just to watch them themselves, but they use them in their team meetings that they have at work, because people are always looking for something else they can throw into a meeting to spark things up. So these are videos that we sold for a long time, and then a few months ago we looked at each other and said, let's just give them away. So that's kind of fun.
These aren't the ones that you did with Larry Wingate, are they?
No. There's one that I did with Larry, and that's really for professional speakers or people that want to be speakers. It's a 90-minute video about the speaking business.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's really taken from the coaching work that Larry and I did with a lot of speakers over the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I remember you had a big event, I think, in Arizona a year ago or so.
Well, yeah, we did two a year, and they were always in Scottsdale, which is where Larry lives. And, yeah, we had a big time with those, but it turned out we were working so hard because we wanted to do a really good job on it. And we looked at each other and said, man, we're working a lot. We're not making enough money. So we mostly did it because Larry and I love to work together. And it was really fun, and we really helped a bunch of people. But we've kind of put that on the shelf now, which is one reason we did the video, so that people could have access to it.
And videos make sense because, I mean, people can't always go to Scottsdale. And
exactly.
As gorgeous as I think that state is, I'm not going there in summertime. I don't care who you are. I'm not going there.
We didn't do them in the summertime either for that very reason.
It's horrible there in the sun. It's a beautiful, beautiful state, though. But, Joe, do you mind? You mentioned benchmarks that small, tiny businesses may have in common with, say, Coca-Cola. Can you share some of those benchmarks?
Sure, absolutely. And let me start with a real core idea that runs through the new book, which is Be the Best at What Matters Most. And it's that, well, actually, you know, I mentioned Apple. There's a quote that I use in the book that I absolutely love from the late Steve Jobs. Listen to this, Denise. I just love this. He said, simplicity has become my mantra. It takes a lot of really hard work to get your thinking clean enough to make things simple. But it's worth all the work. He says it's worth all the work because if you can make things simple, you can move mountains. And I can stand in front of any group and say, how many of you ever think to yourselves, you know, we're making this way more complicated than it needs to be. And, of course, every hand in the room goes up.
Mine just did. You didn't see me. My hand went up.
Okay.
I do it all the time.
Mine went up. I literally raised my own hand when I asked the question.
Yeah.
I know, pick me. But it's funny. When you look at people that are able to be successful and sustain that success, one of the things that they all have in common, whether individuals or businesses, is this ability to simplify. And when you simplify, then you can get clarity and you can get focus. And when you get focused on, and this is where the title of the book comes from, when you get focused on what matters most, then you become infinitely more effective, more efficient. I never forget, a guy came up to me, and this was a couple of years ago, really in the throes of the recession. And he said, I'm doing everything. I mean, every single thing I can think of to make my business work, and it's just not happening. And I said, well, that might be your problem, is you're doing everything you can think of. Mm-hmm. I said, you look at who's doing well, and it's not the people that do the most things. It's the people that do the most important things.
And do them extraordinarily well.
Yeah. To do that, though, you've got to get clarity on, well, okay, what does matter most? And then you know where to put your effort and put your focus.
Mm-hmm. And your money.
And your money, absolutely, your resources.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have this where you're at, but some years ago, you couldn't drive down the road without seeing a bench by the bus stop that had somebody. It was always a State Farm ad, it seemed like.
Yep.
And I think, do those things really work? I mean, we already know who State Farm is, but what if Joe Bob's, you know, pizza place put an ad there? I rather suspect that people would glance at it and not even know what it was. But some bench salesman sold a ton of those things. And
oh,
I always
absolutely.
Thought it was just a terrible waste of money.
Yeah, and you know, I think we get caught in doing things because other people do it, because some really slick salesperson. Listen, I was right on the edge. This was, I don't know, close to a year ago. Denise, I was right on the edge of hiring a company to develop a Joe Calloway app. Yes, an app. And it was just
what would
so cool.
Do? Yeah, but what
I'm
would
not
it do?
Sure, but I'm not
there you
sure,
go.
But it was so cool.
It has
and
to
then
have a
luckily,
function.
Yeah, luckily my partner and I talked it through, and we decided. she basically said, "Which is like now what? What would it do?"
Yeah.
And finally, you know, a ray of light came out of the sky, and I thought, "This is dumb." I mean, it's great for some people. Doing an app makes all the sense in the world, but
absolutely.
Not for me.
And well, unless you're delivering videos or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It really, it has to have a purpose.
Yeah, it really does. And it's like the whole concept of innovation, which I'm a great believer, that you have to constantly innovate and improve. But you don't, I'm not a believer in changing for the sake of change. I'm a believer in changing and innovating for the sake of creating value. How does it create or add value? And if you can't answer that question, then why are you doing it? Unless it's just for fun, and that's okay too, I guess, to a point.
Well, yeah, if you want to just piddle around and throw a little bit of money at it, but it has to have a function because people these days are so inundated in iPhones and iPads and you know all of our technology. I'm guilty. I have it all. I mean, my little iPad follows me around from room to room. It goes practically... My iPhone now is in the car because I hate talking on that phone, but my iPad goes everywhere with me. And, you know, honestly, what happens is that if you put out junk applications or things that just don't make sense to the end user, you lose credibility.
Oh, absolutely.
You just do. That's just the way it works. That's how our mind works.
You know, it's like in my line of work, it's thought to be very important to have a book out. And there are people that say, look, just write a book. I mean, just get a book out there. Just get something out there. And I'm always the voice on the other shoulder saying, whoa, 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 whoa. Don't just get something out there. Get something really good out there. Take the time to create something really, really, really good. Because if you don't, it's going to haunt you. It'll come back and bite you. But if you do, it can be a terrific boost to your business. But a book can be, I mean, that's just, it can be anything. I'm such a believer that quality beats hype. It just does. Particularly now. Mm-hmm. There's a chapter in the book called How the Internet is Killing Hype. And it's because if you make claims that aren't true, then there are so many consumer sites and blogs. I mean, the customers will bust you in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you will get called out quickly, and rightfully
so. Exactly. Absolutely.
One of my pet peeves about people putting out books very quickly, and I'm a voracious reader. I've got something like 3,000 books in my garage, in my house. I've got wall-to-wall bookcases in my garage. I mean, that's the overflow. And on my two Kindles, I have close to 3,000 books. Larry Winkett's got his own shelf in my office. I mean, I read everything. And your book is up there with Larry's. And I wanted to talk about that, too, because I bought the Kindle version as well. But here's my thing.
Good.
I will download these books, and a lot of them I'll get for free. You know, there are brand new authors that are saying, okay, we're going to make this free for 24, 48 hours. Look, if they are sloppily or hastily written and they are peppered with, I'm a grammar Nazi, that thing goes off my device in 5 seconds. I can't stand it. But that person just lost credibility with me. It may have been the beginnings of a great book, but I'll never know.
So, you know,
I'm afraid I'm not the only one out there like that. We're just like, there's too much competition.
There is too much competition, and I've gotten to the point, you know, I used to be one of those people that you get into a book and you think, well, I don't want to just stop reading it. I mean, I bought the book. Oh, my gosh, I'll bail out on a book in a heartbeat now. If there's nothing there of substance, if the quality is not there, I'm gone. I'm moving on. But I think that's becoming more and more true with everything and not just books. People are really looking for quality, and rightfully so. Good for us.
Oh, absolutely. And like I was telling you in the green room before we got on the show, you had sent me this. You were so wonderful. You sent me an autographed copy of your book. And I went, oh, and I took pictures of it, and I put it on Facebook. I was so excited.
<I know. laughs>
And
that was fun.
Then I
Thank
started reading it, though. I was so delighted to have that book. And I started reading it, and my habit of reading with a book is to have a yellow marker in one hand and my little stickies on the other side. And I went, okay, this is autographed. I am not marking this book up. So I went to Kindle and I bought the Kindle version. I'm like, woohoo, now I can go to town on
there
this
you
thing.
Go.
So I've got both. Thank you so much for that book. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
So I want to know, I mean, we're going to go a little bit far afield. We were talking in the green room, my imaginary green room. About your life, and you've got young children, and I love that story. Do you mind sharing, you know, your fatherhood with our audience?
I don't mind a bit. My wife, who's a little bit younger, she's 9 years younger than me. We have
oh, that's terrible,
two,
Joe. That's just terrible.
I know. We have two daughters, Kate and Jessica, who are 7 and 11. Now, we are both friends. You've mentioned our close mutual friend, Larry Wingate.
Mm-hmm.
Larry's sons, and Larry and I are exactly the same age. Our birthdays are about 2 weeks apart. Larry's children are like 31 and 34,
right,
which is the age of most of my contemporaries' kids. And so my daughters are the age of most of my friends' grandchildren. But it's been so, oh my gosh, it's so much fun for me. And you and I were saying, and I know it's true in my case, that having children at an older age, it's not better or worse necessarily. It just gives you a different perspective.
Right.
And I am, for me, and you used the word in the green room, appreciation. I have such an appreciation for the experience of being with these girls as they grow up. I just take it intravenously. It's just the greatest thing in the world. And I do think it's a different appreciation that you have for it.
I would think so, because I think as younger parents, you're scrambling for money. You're scrambling to create the career or careers that you want. You're trying to buy that first home. You don't know if your car is going to make it to the store. You know, there are just so many things going on that I see with very young parents. And what I've noticed with my friends who are older parents, they're calm, they're appreciative of their children, they're pretty established, they've, you know, got all their angst kind of out of the way, and those kids are just came along at the perfect time. And it sounds like that's what happened with you.
It is what happened, and it's just the best. I mean, I just get kind of stupid gooey over the whole thing because I just really eat it up.
That's a good thing.
I mean,
if you're going to have kids, you kind of need to like them,
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So how do they, I mean, when you're traveling a lot, and I guess my question, I wanted to give our audience a little feel of who you are, author, speaker, family man, but how is it when you have to leave? Because you travel a good bit. That's got to be heartbreaking.
I don't travel nearly as much as I used to, and that's by design. I've limited my schedule. And a big part of it is, I mean, I like my kids. I like my wife. I want to hang out with them. But I tell you, honestly, Denise, when I drive to the airport, I'm kind of like a little kid leaving for camp. I mean, for camp for the first time. I don't want to go. And I'll get halfway weepy going to the airport because I just don't want to go. Let me tell you the great thing about my work, though. This is a tremendous blessing, is that when I am at home, well, let me put it this way. 35 minutes ago, I was sitting downstairs with my 7-year-old daughter. I mean, I've got two offices, and I work mostly out of the one in my home. So when I am at home, my schedule is so incredibly flexible that I can, and this is kind of a Norman Rockwell deal, but the elementary school that our youngest goes to is literally around the corner and down the block. So at 3:00 in the afternoon, I can walk down there and we hold hands and walk home from school. I mean, aww. But it's ridiculously wonderful. And I actually get to spend much more time with them than I would if I had an 8-to-5 job. So it turns out really well.
And that leads into, you know, my next question or observation, if you will, that entrepreneurism is a very good thing. I mean, I think we need it for our country. I think we need it for ourselves. I wouldn't know to be any different. Somebody asked me yesterday on a radio interview, when did you know you were going to be an entrepreneur? And I said, I didn't ever not know that I was going to be one.
Yeah.
It just never occurred to me that I couldn't do it. And maybe I'm just lucky there. Maybe I'm just pig-headed. I don't know. But what I do know is that working on my terms and working as hard and as fast and as furious as I do on the things that I do gives me immense satisfaction. I don't want to work in somebody else's office. I run with scissors. I don't play well with others. Seriously, I don't.
Yeah.
So for me, I need to be alone. You know, it's been very, very important for me to be alone. But I find that when I'm talking with people like you and other people who are very, very high achievers, we're happy people. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, we may be working till midnight. We may be working at 3 a.m. We're happy. We don't care.
Yeah, and you know what I've said, that I mean, I've been on my own for so long, just forever, my whole adult life, on my own in terms of having my own business, that if I were to actually get hired by a company and have a real job, I would either quit or be fired within 3 hours.
I wouldn't make it that long. Yeah. My hood on my car wouldn't get cooled down. I'd be out.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe, back up a little bit, because you've been doing this for a long time. I would love to hear your kind of progression from, let's say, young adulthood, to, college, high school. I mean, you went straight into being an entrepreneur. Would you share that story?
Well, actually, I didn't go straight into it. I didn't go straight into it. It was a pretty quick transition. High school, and even starting in junior high school, I was couple of things, maybe the biggest thing was I was in bands. I was in rock and roll bands, it's like, oh my gosh, how much fun is this? We were getting paid and making money doing something that we would have mowed yards to earn the money to pay to get to do, and so it was a very cool thing. And then I had the great fortune just out of college. To get a job that was almost as much fun as being in a rock and roll band, I went to work on the staff of the Speaker of the House of Representatives in the state of Tennessee because I loved politics. And so I had this really fun job smack in the middle of politics. And then I made a big change, and this is where I learned about business. My brother-in-law, who was living in another part of the country, called me and said, listen, I'm going to start a little real estate firm. Why don't you come do it with me? And so I moved from Tennessee to the state of Washington, learned about real estate, and that's where I learned business. I learned about contracts. I learned, buying and selling, all of that. Mm-hmm. But I only did it for a couple of 3 years. I very quickly became the general manager of that little real estate firm, and one of my main duties was we had a meeting every single morning of all the real estate agents, and that was my meeting. And, Denise, I got hooked on this idea, which is what can I come up with and give to these people that will help them be more successful? Because I got paid based on how much business they did. Mm-hmm. So it was a win-win. I obviously wanted them to succeed for a lot of reasons, but one was that's what my income was tied to. But I really loved this notion of, can I find ideas that if and pass them on to people in such a way that they come back and say, holy moly, that really, really helped. And so that's kind of what drives me. And I love the creative part of my work, which is the finding the ideas and coming up with them. And then you write the books or go out and give the speeches, pass them on to people. But I just love spreading around, look, here's what works. You can do this too.
Right. Well, how did you come to work with these giant companies? I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how did all this happen, and I know our audience
okay.
is too, because yeah, there has to be a logical progression. And Joe,
yeah,
what I want people to understand is if you can do it, if I can do it, by golly, they can too.
Oh yeah. And when I decided to go on my own, leave the real estate business, and I basically started out, and it was just really dopey, and I didn't know how to do it, and I did everything wrong, but little by little, I figured it out. And what I did was I started I joined the Chamber of Commerce, started mm-hmm. going down the list, and this was before computers. I was doing this with a typewriter. I would just write letters to the heads of companies in Nashville locally saying, I do training programs. Let me do one for you. And they would call and say, well, what do you do training programs on? And I would
really?
Say, well, what do you need? You know,
so you didn't really have one. Okay.
No, I'd go buy a couple of books. I'm real
right.
good at processing information and
yeah.
you know, passing it on. And so little by little, I established some business here in Nashville. And then I got asked, somebody locally in Nashville asked, that worked for AT&T, said, we're having a Southeast regional meeting. We need a speaker after lunch. Would you do it? I did it. I then got hired by virtually every branch manager that was at that meeting. Then the Northeastern region used me. And then, boom, now all of a sudden I'm all over the country doing jobs for AT&T. Those people would tell people in other companies, hey, we had a guy come in that was really helpful to us. And so it was word of mouth. But let me tell you, I made it sound real quick. I held on by my fingernails
mm-hmm.
for 3-4 years. Trying to get traction and get it going. And, you know, it would be like one step forward, two steps back, two steps
right.
forward, one step back. That's the nature of being an entrepreneur. It's scary stuff. But, you know, the good to me, I've always said that I think the best stuff is kind of equal parts fun and scary.
Like a ride.
And
one of those carnival
yeah,
rides. It's like, woohoo. Oh, God.
It's right. I'm
yeah.
writing this thing because it's kind of fun to be scared.
But,
right. So I just, but, you know, the key, people say, well, what was the key to your getting traction? And I say, standing up straight and completely unabashedly, I got traction because I did really good work. For me,
mm-hmm.
and to this day, people say, what's your greatest selling idea? And I say, do good work. Put a great
right.
product or service out there, that is the single best thing you can conceivably do for sales. And so I've yeah. always been laser beam focused on how can I make it better? How can I make it better? How can I make it
mm-hmm.
better?
And you have to deliver quality. You can't just here's something that bothers me about our kind of new internet presence these days is you know, people want to sell you something, which is fine. If I like you, know you, trust you, I will probably buy your product. I don't
yep.
want to be instantly upsold. 5 minutes. I mean, I haven't even made it through the checkout process, and you're trying to sell me something
yeah.
else. I got to tell you, Joe, I'm a little insulted by that. And just
yeah.
because I'm pig-headed, I always say no, 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 just as a matter of principle. I may actually
yeah.
want it, but I don't know yet.
I'll tell you something interesting, Denise.
I think it's a bad
I'm
idea.
Very much. Well, and I agree with you. I'm strictly in the business-to-business arena. And
mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, except for books. Individuals buy my books.
Right,
but
right.
I have had so many clients over the years say, one of the things we really appreciate you is you're not constantly trying to sell us the next thing.
Well,
you
mm-hmm.
do the work that we bought, and you focus on that. which makes us want to buy the next thing.
Right.
So I tell you, I'm like a broken record about that. Do good work. And it's amazing to me how many people say, oh, my work is fabulous. My product's fabulous. I just can't get anybody to buy it. Well, come on. Hello, reality check. If your product was fabulous, people would talk about it. If your service was fabulous, people would talk about it, and you'd be getting business. Now, of course you have to market. Of course you have to sell. But at the core of that is you got to be doing good stuff.
Well, you really do. And I think what a lot of people don't understand is that you may not make that sale immediately or that second sale or that third sale.
Yep.
But if they like you and they trust you and they really know that you've got their best interest at heart, they're going to circle back around to you. It might be a year, three, four. Doesn't matter. They're still in your pipeline, whether you recognize it or not. You're not badgering them. They're watching you out of the corner of their eye, and when they're ready, you are top of mind. I think the psychology is just good.
Yeah, it is. And I'm a big fan of, and I like it when people do this with me, when I'm the customer. Or maybe, as you say, before I've ever done business with them, but I like them. They've made a good impression. And I am perfectly okay with people appropriately staying in touch with me.
Right.
In a non-pressure way. I mean, I did that. Larry Wingate and I have both been fans of postcards for years. And I would do these mass postcards, and that's it. I wouldn't follow up with a phone call, although that's perfectly fine. For some people, they do lots of phone call follow-up, and that's great. That can be appropriate, too. But what that postcard did was just remind people that I was out there, and here's what I do. And it was amazing the great response we got just from reminding people that we were around, because we had made a great impression and they liked us and they trusted us.
Right.
Really, you hit on the two keys right there, like you and trust. Well,
and they have to. And these days, we are relationship marketing, whether you like it or not. I mean, the internet is out there. Everything about us is out there. And I always advise people to use extreme caution about what they're putting out there. Joe, I've got, you know, we're talking about your daughters. This is a huge pet peeve of mine, and I think it's the stupidest thing parents can do. You know, it's summertime. They've got their beautiful little kids out on the beach in their little bathing suits, and darn if they don't plaster Facebook with that. Drives me insane. Do you know where those pictures wind up? Don't put that stuff up there. Just don't do it. So, but that's a whole other pet peeve. But and I lost my train of thought. My train of thought. I was mad. But you have to be careful.
You got mad and you went on a rant.
No, I did.
But what you're talking about, I think what you're talking about is the appropriate use and from a business standpoint too of social media, because we're talking
about staying
in touch and being out there. And I love social media. And but I tell you what, I'm very conscious anything that I post, and I'm pretty much Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook.
Me too.
It's just that the universe sees all of that. And so, I mean, come on, use your head. Use your head.
Yeah. And I will tell people, and I know you do this and Larry does this, Larry's Facebook page, oh, my gosh, he will blow it up every now and then.
Yeah,
I go over there just for entertainment. I do.
Oh yeah, but see, that's Larry's job is to pull it up.
That's
Larry says if I don't make a couple of hundred people boiling mad every day, I'm not doing my job.
Oh, he has a hard time with me because I always just laugh and go, "Hey, Larry." I love what he posts. But here's the thing, and I preach this all the time because, as an online business manager, web developer, social media person, I will tell people, look, with Facebook, LinkedIn not quite as much. It's more business to business. But with Facebook in particular, you have an opportunity to be personable, not personal.
Yes.
Learn the difference.
Yeah.
And I think it's so critical to understand that difference.
Yeah, it is. And, it's interesting. People will ask me sometimes, they'll say, what's your Facebook strategy? Because you seem to do a lot of stuff on there that's not, I don't see how it makes you money. And I say, look, and that's a pet peeve of mine. are people that the only thing they post is they're asking you to buy something from them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that drives me crazy. But I have clients, I'll post a music video every now and then. I had a banker call me. He said, it was an AC/DC video. He said, oh, my gosh, I love AC/DC. He said, and you know, it reminded me, I've been meaning to call you. And it's funny. We had this whole link of rock music that we didn't even know we had. And it just,
right.
But it was a matter of being personable. And,
right.
But not going overboard with it.
No. And, Joe, I do the same thing. I mean, I will post, I guess people are looking at me going, why are you posting blog posts from your competitors? I don't have any competitors. I'm very, very good at what I do. I have my own clients. My clients love me. I'm good. But if my colleagues in the industry are writing something I think is phenomenal, you bet I'll share it.
Yeah, I love that about my colleagues that are people like Larry Wingate and,
mm-hmm.
and Mark Sanborn and Scott McCain. Mm-hmm. And we're friends. We also have great professional respect for each other. And we're constantly, not just that little handful of people, but across the spectrum, all of us, I think, that are good at what we do and feel secure about, or we're constantly posting things from other people that could be
mm-hmm.
considered our competitors. It works. It's, in the long run, it just really works.
And it doesn't occur, I mean, why would I want to shut out my, we'll call them competitors for the sake of a, you know, lack of a better description, but I mean, if they're doing great things in the industry, and my followers need to know what's going on in the industry,
exactly.
I didn't write that article, why wouldn't I share
right.
that? It's not
right.
logical to me.
No.
So, you know, Facebook is very, very important, but you have to be careful how you operate with it. So let's go back just a bit. So you started with your training with a typewriter, which I love because
I
bought one of the very first computers before there was an internet. That's what a nerd I am. I mean, this thing was a $3,000 boat anchor. It did nothing but, it did great typing. I mean, I typed a lot on it.
Well, see, that's what I remember
really
when I bought my first computer. Denise, we bought our first computer system. It was like $13,000.
Oh, God, I paid three and thought I was going to die.
Oh, well, we got a couple of computers and we got a printer and that stuff. And then we turn it on and look at each other and go, what now? It's a typewriter.
That's exactly right. It was a fancy word processor. And I spoke DOS for
processor.
The longest kind of time. I mean, I did. I had the manuals. I still speak DOS. But it did nothing. And then when the internet came along, remember the old dial-up, and you could make kind of sort of a web page, but it really, there was no graphical user interface, GUI. It was a mess, but it was coming along.
That's right.
When the internet hit, I was like, there is a God. I mean, I always knew that somehow I was going to make a living with a computer. Now, granted, this was before computers did a darn thing but sit there and squat on your desk. That was it. That's all they did. But I always knew. There was just this sense of, I can do this. I don't know what I'm going to do, but by golly, I'm doing something with it. And off I went. So sometimes I think for entrepreneurs, it's just a knowing, isn't it? You just know that you're on the right path.
I absolutely agree. And there's been times in my career when I've thought, you know, there's something here. And I'm
mm-hmm.
I haven't cracked the code on it yet. I'm not sure what it is. But there's something here. And I stay with it until eventually, hopefully, that light bulb goes on.
I'm having one of those episodes, and I've been having it for about 6 months. Yeah, I will wander around through my house. You know, I have to get up frequently because if you're sitting in front of a bank of monitors, it's not good for you. So I'm up and down like a jack-in-the-box all day long. Every 15 minutes, I'm up and moving. You know, put a load of laundry in. I'll go play with the dog. You know, then I come back. I'm refreshed. My brain is more acute, and I can go back to work.
Yep.
And I'll be wandering through the house, Joe. I kid you not. And this thing will pop into my head. It's almost like there's this little thing, angel, maybe sitting on my shoulder. I know I'm on the brink of something. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But I know it's there, and I'm darned if I can figure out what it is. It's driving me crazy.
I think a lot of entrepreneurs, though, have that thought process in common. That feeling of, there's something here.
Yeah.
And I need to figure out what it is.
and I can't figure it out. So I'm just, you know, kind of opening up my mind and saying, okay,
exactly.
When you're ready, let me know. I'd
That's
like
right.
to know. I'll be there.
Yeah, come on out. I'll be here.
Yeah, come on. Yeah. I'll make dinner and everything. Just come on in.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's how our brains work. So you went from your typewriter, which, and then where did you go from there? I mean, you started making, you know, events, and when did the books come along after you started speaking?
You know, the books didn't come along for a long time. I mm-hmm. started in about 1983. My first book, which was Becoming a Category of One, I wrote in 2003. It actually came out, I think, in early 2004. And then I've done a book every couple of years since then. This is the new book is my fifth book. And
now,
so
how did you find a publisher? I mean, that's a process.
Well, let me tell you something.
It?
And this gets to the heart of what I think part of what you do. And it speaks to put good work out there and good things will happen. I started mm-hmm. posting articles on my website. Of course, now I've got a blog, but then it was just, you know, just stationary, static articles.
Right.
And I had a publisher call me from New York City, Matthew Holt, who he said, I'm an editor with John Wiley and Sons of New York. He mm-hmm. said, you know, your name has come up a couple of times as somebody that's out there doing good work as a speaker at conventions. So I went to your website. He said, I really like the way you write, and I like what you say. Would you be interested in doing a book? And I said, yeah, mm-hmm. I really would. And he said, do you know how to write a book proposal? And I said, funny thing, just a couple of months ago, I went to the Maui Writers Conference, and I learned how to write a book proposal. He said, well, write one up, and he said, write one up and send it to us. So I did, and he wrote back and said, thanks very much. I didn't hear anything for a couple of months, and I thought, oh, well, so much for that. But what it was doing is it was making its way through the various committees and people. And after a couple of months, they called me up and said, we want to offer you a book deal. And
wow.
So I've been with Wiley, John Wiley and Sons has been my publisher ever since. But to me, the moral of the story was, number one, I learned something, which was, I'm going to go to this book conference and learn about the book business, and learn how to write a book proposal. So I learned something that, boom, 2 months later I could use.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was, I wrote really good articles.
Right.
Not junk articles, not stuff just to have out there. I wrote really good articles. And the publisher saw them and said, do a book.
You know, you're
and
the second person I know of that happened to.
Really, and you know, that's not the normal way it happens. Usually you come up with a manuscript or an idea, and you try and find an agent that will then represent you to publishers.
Right.
But
right.
And that was a big breakthrough. I was doing fine in my career. I was doing well. But that first book, oh my gosh, that changed everything. That was
a big
boost.
And I have a title for you. I don't know if this book has been written, but just do good work. That's a great title.
I'm telling you. See, that title appeals to me. Okay, it's
do
all right.
Good work.
Now we got to see who writes it first, because I'm going to steal your title.
You write it because I'm writing my own book called Your Office on the Web. So
I love that.
You write it.
See, I love Your Office on the Web because I love really straightforward. Here's what this is about. Here's the core
exactly.
idea. I love that kind of title.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And actually, my business coach, and I had a bit of an argument tussle with her over this. She said, you know, because Your Office on the Web has always been my primary web development site, and it really doesn't do anything. It just kind of showcases my work, just kind of hangs out there.
Yeah.
And she said, Denise, that site, you know, pretty as it is, doesn't really do anything for you. You need to take it down. And I went, no, it was one of my very first websites. It was the very first domain I bought. I mean, it's close and near to my heart. And beyond that, Microsoft wants it. You know, they keep trying to buy the name from me. So I said, no. She said, write a book. Call it Your Office on the Web and make that your book site. I said, that I can do.
There you go.
So I'm writing.
There you go.
So, and it made sense. I mean, Your Office is on the web these days. So, but yeah, you write your book and I'll write mine and we'll chat.
Well, Chad, we'll go to
yeah, I would love to see that title. Signings, yeah. But okay, so here's what I would like to know, because everybody always says, okay, at some point you have to brand yourself. So I'm curious at that kind of T in the road, if you will, where you were speaking and then you wrote the book. Had you thought about branding yourself? Had you come up with a way to describe your business or describe what you were doing? Or were you just saying, I'm Joe Calloway, I'm a speaker?
No.
I mean, how are you conveying to people what it was that they got?
Yeah. What I do, when people say now, what do? I say, I write business books. Mm-hmm. And I speak to business groups mm-hmm. about ideas in the marketplace that can help them differentiate and be more successful. And then they will generally ask a follow-up question. But, mm-hmm. You know, that first book that I wrote, Becoming a Category of One, that really has kind of become, it's almost like the Ken Blanchard's brand really exploded with the One-Minute Manager.
Right.
And he really became associated with that book title, even though he's written 30 books since then. And mm-hmm. people still associate me with my first book, Becoming a Category One.
It's a great title.
Okay, they say that's the category of one guy. Or uh-huh. even if they, a lot of times they'll hire me because of the new book that I've written, mm-hmm. but they still will say, he's the guy that wrote Becoming a Category of One. And
gotcha.
So that, in a way, became a brand. You know, I toyed with the idea of having names for my business. For a while, I was, Business Motivation Resources, and was that something? It seems like I was something else. But I ended up just sticking with my name, and that's why my website is just joecalloway.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to make it very, very simple and make it about the name, and it's like, just go to the website, joecalloway.com.
Right.
And
that makes
explain.
Sense, because you now have that name recognition. I mean, I've been doing the same battle myself. Am I a virtual assistant? Am I an OBM? Am I a web developer?
Yeah.
Am I a one-stop shop? What the heck am I?
Right.
So I'm right there with you. It's like, okay, I'm just Denise Griffiths. Deal with it. And that's
yeah.
pretty much where I think I'm going to go. I'm Denise Griffiths. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I agree. And people say, well, are you the CEO of your company? And I say, it's just me. There's nothing to be CEO of. It's just me.
I know. Well, how long have you been doing this, Joe? I mean, you started basically out of, you know, your real estate office. So how long have you been Joe Calloway?
Yeah, since I went on, it's been, I think it would be 30 years this year. 1983.
And no regrets. Nice.
Yeah, no regrets. I got tired of so much travel, but I did something about that. I'm mm-hmm. traveling less all the time, which again is by choice. But no, it's been a fascinating career, and I've gotten to meet just countless numbers of wonderful people. I mean, because of what I do. I mean, look at this. I've got a new pal now. I never would have met you if I hadn't been in this line of work. So yeah, it's been a good ride.
And I think Larry Winkett introduced us.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think absolutely.
I believe
Larry
so.
Was.
I think
and Larry's an example.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, I met Larry almost 20 years ago. And Larry and I mean, it's funny, he'll call me every now and then, or I'll call him. He called me a few weeks ago. He said, you know that job that you just got from such and such? And I said, yeah, how'd you know about it? He says, I was the other one up for the job. They chose you. but listen, I've been able to say that to him, the same thing to him. And Larry and I have become, we talk either, it's mostly by email, but we will talk two or three times a day, virtually mm-hmm. every day. He's just become a really good friend. And, you know, I've met a lot of people like that in this business.
And he's a good guy. And here's the thing, we're going to go back to social media. Look, I live in a village in between two sugarcane fields. I'll tell anybody who listens, look, I live in a little small town. I'm equidistant between Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. I rarely leave my house. I'm not sure why I have a car sitting in the garage. You know, I don't have time to. I mean, I really don't need it a whole lot. I mean, I'm an introvert. I love being by myself. I do my best work when I'm by myself. But here's the thing, Joe. As a result of social media and relationship marketing, I get to meet people like you, like Larry, like Bob Berg, like Dondi Scamacci, like people in my own industry. I mean, I get to speak with and interact with and oftentimes work with some of the greatest people. I would never have that opportunity if I were working in somebody's real estate office or insurance office or wherever. So I think what I'm trying to convey to our audience is if you have an entrepreneurial bone in your body, go for it. Don't wait for it to be perfect. Just start. Start now.
Here's a good way to kind of wind down. I've got a good friend who's an entrepreneur. His name's Arnie Malham. He owns a very successful advertising agency. And Arnie says, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is, if you wait until everything's going to be perfect, as we opened the show with, we said, you won't do it. He says, and that's an opportunity lost. So do it. Do it wrong, then do it better.
Right.
And I think there's just a lot of wisdom in that.
There is. There is. And these days with the Internet, you can course correct instantly. I mean,
there's
so many things that you can do. I mean, if you put something wrong on a page, you log in, you fix it, and you're back out. So I think the only thing that stops us is our own internal fears or possibly our own internal voices.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're not our best friends, are they?
No, absolutely. No, there's a book called The War of Art that Stephen Pressfield wrote that I would recommend everybody. It's a little bitty book. You can read it very quickly. The War of Art. And what it's about, it's an odd title, what it's about is the obstacles that we put in front of ourselves, that we put in front of ourselves, those internal obstacles. It's a great book.
I'm going to grab that. We've only got just about, two or three more minutes, and this hour went by so fast. Joe, would you please come back another time?
Please, anytime. Just tell me when.
I would love to have you. I mean, I have so many more questions for you. So anyway, tell people one more time.
Let me know and I'll be here.
Oh, I will. I absolutely will. Now, tell people one more time where they can find you.
JoeCalloway.com, C-A-L-L-O-W-A-Y.
Joe, was there anything you wanted to mention before we wind up the show?
You know, I don't think we can top what you just kind of said, which was if you've got an inkling of an idea that you want to do something, boy, you're not going to regret doing it nearly as much as you're going to regret not doing it. So
give it a shot. That is the truth. Yeah. And anybody who doesn't journal, and I don't know if you journal or not, that thing has been an invaluable tool for me because I can go back and go, whoa, why did I not jump on that? What the heck? And I can spend a little time beating myself up, and then I go do it because, okay, now it's time. Just go do it.
Yeah, it's powerful.
It really is. So anyway, I have really enjoyed chatting with you. And tell people, I didn't get a chance to give all of the titles of your books. So if you don't mind, we've got about 90 more seconds.
Yeah, the new one is the most fun. And it's an easy read. And it's got just a ton of really practical ideas. I've had so much fun with this book. The title of it is Be the Best at What Matters Most. And you can get it pretty much anywhere, certainly anywhere on the internet. Mm-hmm. Amazon's got it. Barnes & Noble. Anywhere you can find a Larry Winget book, you can find one of my books.
Poor Larry. His ears are burning right about now.
Oh, he eats it up. Larry loves to be talked about. Nobody loves it more.
Yeah, but we're talking nice about him, and he may not like that.
That's true.
But I have to say, I'm looking in the Kindle version, and I'm on page 9, and this is something that grabbed me, and it's so important. I think people need to know this about the book. And we're talking about the wow factor and the gimmicks. And you know, if you're the best, you don't need gimmicks. But here is something that you said in this book that I found so, so important. And I actually marked it on my Kindle so I could go back to it. It says, if you're truly the best, you don't need gimmicks. But if your core value proposition is lacking, you'd better pile on all the glitz, buzzers, bells, and gimmicks you can and hope it will work. And in the parentheses, you say, it won't. And I love
it
that
won't.
Because it won't. It absolutely will not. You're going to wind up naked in the village square, and people will see through it.
I'm telling you, do good work. It's my next book.
Is it?
It is now.
I think you should, too. I mean, that's what we were talking about. Do good work. Just do nothing but good work. So I can't wait to read that.
Listen, I'm serious. I love that title.
Oh, God. Go for it. Really, really, you're going to write it?
I'm thinking about it because I just think it's a great concept, and it's right down the middle of what I believe.
Do good work. Well, good, good, good. Well, we are absolutely out of time. Joe, thank you so much for being with me. I loved it. I've had so much fun with you. And I can't wait to have you back on the program again. Thank you.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Well, listen, thank you, everybody, for being here. The show will be available for download in about an hour. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names. And this is Denise Griffiths and Joe Calloway wishing you a wonderful weekend. And I will see you next week. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Denise.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.